Muir goes into party and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
A drunken man at the party went up to the strange woman and embraced her clumsily. She slapped his face. I'm sorry, he said. I thought you were my wife. Said the woman, you'd be a fine husband to have, don't you think? Just look at you, will you? Drunken, clumsy, disgusting brute. Good heavens, he said, you talk like her as well. An old man went to a fancy dress ball at the nudist camp. He won first prize as the Dead Sea Scrolls. He was furious, but he'd gone as a prune. I went to a party last night. We played Jockey's Knock.
Jockey's Knock?
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, it's like Postman's Knock, but with more horseplay. Yeah, I don't think it's funny. A man came back from a party very drunk, and just as he was creeping in by the front door, he heard his wife moving around upstairs. Oh dear, he thought, she mustn't think I've been drinking. I know, I should pretend I've been reading all evening. So he put the plan into action, went into the sitting room and sat down. After a few moments, the door opened and his wife peered in. What do you think you're doing, she asked.
Reading, dear, just reading.
Shut up, you drunken idiot, she said. Close that suitcase and come to bed.
Everyone's a bit different at a party. Another personality seems to take over. People who are normally relaxed and chatty stiffen up into sort of mouthing idiots. And shy, retiring types, like me, suddenly break out into noisy extroverts. It's partly the alcohol, but there's more to it than that. There's something about parties. A lot of people claim to hate them. A lot of people do hate them. But this doesn't stop the haters from attending or feeling piqued when they're not invited to parties. Oscar Wilde sums up this curious ambivalence to society in A Woman of No Importance. Gerald says,
I suppose society is wonderfully delightful.
Lord Illingworth replies,
to be in it is merely a bore, but to be out of it is simply a tragedy.
People go on giving parties in spite of disasters. Major events are celebrated with a party. Weddings, for instance. A report from a Nebraska newspaper.
A reception immediately followed the ceremony with papers and flowers decorating the table with the traditional tired wedding cake.
That ended up in tears. or a tea party after some sort of conference, say.
A committee of ladies with Mrs. Roberts as leader threw themselves into the tea.
Waiter, there's a lady in my soup. That was from a Devon paper. That sort of semi-official party is fraught with problems in the planning stage. From the Daily Mirror.
Mr. Curry, who is the Mason agent, said, they were planning to call the get-together a cheese and wine party until I pointed out to them that it was illegal. We didn't want to get into trouble, so we changed the name. We thought if we called it cheese and you-know-what, everyone would think of wine. Rather unfortunate.
Well, people go on giving parties, hoping for the final accolade of being thought a good host. But not everyone makes it. Here's Max Beerbohm.
Macbeth and Lady Macbeth stand out as the supreme type of all that a host and hostess should not be.
But you know if you've made it when you give a party. It's not if people say, marvellous party, as they leave. Everyone does that. It's when they're still saying it the next day.
Well, I don't know, it's the most extraordinary experience. I tell you. Not everybody has that sort of experience. It's something to do with the sun. I wouldn't understand myself, really. Quite for no reason, I'm here for the season and high as a kite, living in error with Maud at Capferra, which couldn't be right. You know, everyone's here frightfully gay. You know, nobody cares what people say. Now, though the Riviera is really much queerer than Rome at its height, on Wednesday night, I went to a marvellous party with Nunu and Nada and Nell. You know, it was in the fresh air, and we went as we were.
And we stayed as we were, which was hell. Poor Grace started singing at midnight, and she didn't stop singing until four. You know, we knew the excitement was bound to begin when Laura got blind on Dubonnet and Jim and scratched her veneer with a Cartier pin. I couldn't have liked it more, honestly. I mean, it was a marvellous party. We played the most wonderful game. Maureen disappeared and came back in a beard, and we all had to guess at her name, imagine. Old Cecil, good old Cecil, arrived wearing armor, some shells, and a black feather ball. Poor Millicent wore a surrealist comb made of bits of mosaic from St. Peter's in Rome. But the wait was so great that she had to go home. I couldn't have liked it more, honestly. The most fabulous sight of it, I've never seen it to carry on. I mean, it couldn't happen anywhere else, probably. It was peculiar. You know, people's behavior away from Belgravia would make you aghast. So much variety watching societies scampering past. You know, if you have any mind at all, Gibbon's divine decline and fall sounds pretty flimsy. No more than a whimsy. By way of contrast, on Wednesday last, I went to a marvellous party. I must say the fun was intense. We all had to do what the people we knew might be doing 100 years hence. Can you beat it? We talked about growing old gracefully, and Elsie, who's 74, said, A, it's a question of being sincere, and B, if you're supple, you've nothing to fear. Then she swung upside down from a glass chandelier. I couldn't have liked it more. I've been to a marvelous party. We didn't sit down to dinner till 10. You know, and young Bobby Carr did a stunt at the bar with a lot of extraordinary men. Poor Frieda arrived with a turtle, which shattered us all to the core. The Duchess passed out at 2:45, and suddenly Cyril cried, fiddly-dee, and he ripped off his trousers and jumped in the sea. I couldn't have liked it more. I've been to a marvelous party. Elise made an entrance with May. You never have guessed from her fisherman's vest that her bust had been whittled away. Poor Lulu got fried on Chianti and talked about esprit de corps. Louise made a couple of passes at Gus, and Freddy, who hates any kind of a fuss, did half the Big Apple and twisted his truss. Ha ha! I couldn't have liked it more.
Noel Coward. Some hosts cheat about parties. Rather than suffer all the tribulations of arrangements themselves, they take their friends out to a restaurant to eat. Now, this is an extremely expensive way of doing things, and you have to be very careful in your choice of restaurant. You can't believe all the advertisements say. Or sometimes you can, and that's worse.
Come to Blank's Restaurant, where good food is an unexpected pleasure.
That was from the Richmond and Twickenham Times. Well, try this one.
At our restaurant, parties up to 1,000 can and have been done.
But if you go to a restaurant, you do miss out on a lot of the fun of giving a party. All the organisation, the invitations, ordering the food, and of course, buying the drink. It helps when you're buying the drink if you've got some old bottles to take back.
Well, then, there we are. How much on that lot?
Well, that's not mine. Neither is that one.
What do you mean they're not yours? Of course they're yours.
They're Elements and Hunters. I can only take grinders. You ought to know that. Yeah, that's not mine either.
How do you know? How do you know? I took the label. I mean, there's no label on it.
I know, but you left a bit round the stopper. Look, Elements and Hunters. Now, don't try and swing it on me. I'm too old at the game. Wine bottles, nothing on those. Nothing on spirits. Right, so let's see. That's fourpence. What do you want? Packet of crisps?
No, I'll have 3 Arrowroot biscuits. Fourpence on all that lot, it's disgusting.
Now, what's your order?
Well, a good mind not to give it to you. It's a big one.
What, 2 miniatures this week?
You're a bit saucy tonight. What's the matter with you? Somebody knocked that pile of pennies down. Now, listen here. This is a big one. Now, just pin back your ears. This may well clean you right out. Now, I want 10 crates of stout, winter brew, 5 crates of best brown, 12 quarts of dragon's breath, 2 barrels of bitter, 2 crates of Danish lager, and a barrel of rough cider.
Blimey, you having a party?
No, my mother's coming over.
Tony Hancock and Robert Dawning. There are a lot of other preparations to be made when giving a party. Now, here's a useful tip from the Caterham Times.
If you're having dancing and don't want your carpet ruined, to save taking it up, turn it upside down.
Mind you, dancing may not be a very good idea for a party. It can be aesthetically unattractive, according to Heinrich Heine.
British women dance as though they were riding on donkeys.
And dancing can lead to immorality. Here's a description of a particular lady by Sallust.
She could dance more skillfully than an honest woman need.
Dancing can lead to all sorts of goings-on. Perhaps not the sort of thing you want at your party. Some dancers are worse than others. The disgusting erotic potential of the waltz shocked early 19th century. Here's Lord Byron.
From where the garb just leaves the bosom free, that spot where hearts were once supposed to be, round all the confines of the yielded waist, the strangest hand may wander undisplaced. The ladies in return may grasp as much as princely paunches offer to her touch. Thus front to front the partners move or stand, the foot may rest, but none withdraw the hand.
Oh, how much better these days when everybody dances 5 feet apart. But even without the overt immorality of dancing, parties still carry overtones of sex. Robert Surtees.
These sort of boobies think that people come to balls to do nothing but dance, whereas everyone knows that the real business of a ball is either to look out for a wife, to look after a wife, or to look after somebody else's wife.
Social headhunting is a popular game amongst party givers. If you can produce a tame author, artist, footballer, pop star, then your party's one up. The hope, of course, is that the wit of the guests reflects well on the taste and intelligence of the host. But famous people are not necessarily all that interesting to listen to. Here's Sidney Smith on Lord Macaulay.
He has occasional flashes of silence that make his conversation perfectly delightful.
On the other hand, given an appreciative crowd, anybody well known as a funny man can get away with murder. W.S. Gilbert from The Yeoman of the Guard.
'Tis ever thus with simple folk. An accepted wit has but to say, pass the mustard, and they roar their ribs out.
Let's try it. Pass the mustard. Oh, the trouble is, you're not simple folk. You have to take care when inviting the famous to your party that they think it worthwhile. If they don't, they can turn their wit against their host and destroy all his social planning. Dr. Johnson, after an evening out.
This was a good dinner enough, to be sure, but it was not a dinner to ask a man to.
There's a danger. There's a danger in making a party too homely, but there are disadvantages in making the occasion too formal, with all the pomp and circumstance of a toastmaster.
My lord, ladies and gentlemen, Lord Fortescue will take wine with His Excellency, the Bessarabian Ambassador, Count Bobulescu. Bessarabian. My lords, ladies and gentlemen, His Excellency, the Bessarabian Ambassador, Count Bobulescu, will take wine with Lord Fortescue.
Lord Fortescue. Lord Fortescue.
My lords, ladies and gentlemen, Lord Fortescue will take wine with the Bessarabian ambassadress, Countess Bobulescu.
Countess Bobulescu.
Countess Bobulescu.
My lord, ladies and gentlemen, the Bessarabian ambassadress, Countess Bobulescu, will take wine with Lord Fortescue.
Lord Fortescue.
My lord. Gentlemen. Lady of school will take wine with his excellency the Bessarabian ambassador, Count Bobolesco.
Michael Benty, of course. The more formal a party is, the more essential it is for the guests, not to say the toastmaster, to behave correctly. Here are a few useful tips on party behaviour. First, from a Sunday paper.
Be very careful about nakedness at a cocktail party. It is not really the place.
From a book of etiquette.
It is not considered polite to tear bits off your beard and put them in your soup.
Useful information. Ladies, another problem for the host at a party is conversation. He has to ensure that people circulate, talk to each other. Above all, they're kept interested. And it's difficult. Lord Byron again.
Society is now one polished horde formed of two mighty tribes, the bores and bored.
If you're not careful, you can end up with a sort of social event described by P.G. Woodhouse.
It is one of those parties where you cough twice before you speak and then decide not to say it after all.
As far as the best plan for the host is to keep the drink flowing and hope that all your guests are nice, friendly people. And don't invite Dr. Johnson.
The Abbé Raynal probably remembers that being at the house of a common friend in London, the master would approach Johnson with this speech in his mouth. Will you permit me, sir, to present to you the Abbé Raynal? No, sir, replied the doctor very loud.
Conversation stopper. Lord Byron again.
Let us have wine and women, mirth and laughter, sermons and soda water the day after.
Eat, drink and be merry, for tomorrow you'll feel like death. It's not just a physical disorder either, there's that sort of ghastly self-recrimination as you start remembering little details of your behaviour. Here's Logan Pearsall Smith.
The servant gave me my coat and hat, and in a glow of self-satisfaction, I walked out into the night. A delightful evening, I reflected. The nicest kind of people. What I said about finance and French philosophy impressed them. How they laughed when I imitated a pig squealing. But soon after, God, it's awful. Oh, I wish I were dead.
Yes, there's nothing quite like a good old-fashioned morning after.
I'm a little under the weather from last night's party. I have this little headache in my left eye. That's what I called out to thank you for. That wonderful party you threw last night. Of course, we brought our own liquor, but you provided the electricity, and you should be thanked for that. Tell me, Dave, did I have a good time? No, I don't know, Dave. Well, at a certain point of the evening, everything's a complete blank. A few minutes after I arrived. What did I do? What? Oh, no. Oh, God. Oh, boy. Oh, gee, I'm sorry, Dave. The whole window, eh? You just come right out, huh? Yeah, that's a picture window, too, isn't it, Dave?
It's a lucky thing there was nobody walking under it at the time, huh?
Oh. Oh. Oh, boy. Got him edgewise, huh? Oh, well, I'll put them back together, Dave. Those medical people are... Gee, Dave, I can't imagine how I managed to break a window. I don't have any cuts or bruises on my hands. How did I break a window? I see. Were you very fond of that cat? You know, those things are supposed to land on their feet, aren't they, Dave? Dave, I wish you wouldn't be quite so descriptive about the cat, Dave. I'm not a well man, Dave. Yeah, well, first chance we get, we'll bury it all, and I'm sorry. Dave, I wonder if your mind would change the subject to something a little more pleasant, if you don't mind. Tell me, did your wife enjoy the party? What do you mean, I ought to know? I did not. I did not. Oh, Dave, it was a long, hard party, Dave. The curtain watchers may have gotten tired and stretched out for a bit. Well, I thought it was a pile of clothing, Dave. And Dave, you know how I feel about Myrna. Why, I love your wife. Now, that isn't what I meant, Dave. I mean, I love your wife the same way I love you. That's not what I meant either. I hardly think it's necessary for you to warn me to keep my hands off you, too. Well, no kidding. Right off the hinges, huh? The whole damn door. You think you can get along without it, Dave? That's right. Your bathroom is right off your kitchen. Yeah, sorry. Dave, will you come right down to the only real damage I caused was a broken window and a broken door, right? No, I won't forget the cat, Dave. Thank you very much.
Dave, in the shape I was in, it's lucky the only thing I threw through the window was a cat, huh?
Oh, really? Who?
Shelley Berman telling us the party's over. And let's close with an epitaph on a party girl by Richard Usband.
Lovely Pamela, who found one sure way to get around, goes to bed beneath this stone, early, sober, and alone.
Well, we hope you've enjoyed our party. Next week, Alfred and I will be going into the subject of hobbies. So until then, bye! Lovely bye, having you. Super.
Frank Muir Goes Into Parties was produced by Simon Brett and Bob Oliver Rogers. ¶¶